Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Happy New Year! Hi, I'm Jackie Cation. You're listening to the Dork Forest. It is available on all of the websites, and including iTunes and Stitcher and YouTube. And if you go to dorkforest.com or jackiecation.com, you'll find links to all of it. And then I have another podcast with Lori Kilmartin just about stand-up comedy. But this is the Dork Forest, and it's January 2020, so Happy New Year, and feel free to start donating again. That's right. Donations went off last year, and I don't blame you, but think of me. And PayPal will let you do it monthly if you want, but I understand if you don't want, because monthly is its own commitment. But the people who do it monthly, I said do-do. I totally appreciate that. But there is also going to be new merch. I'm phasing out one of the Dork Forest t-shirts. I think it's the black one. It might be the green one. The green one's almost completely out of stock, so I think it might be the Dork Forest one itself, but feel free to try and order stuff so that I can get those two new shirts on the website, because right now the merch page is a bit crowded, shall we say. By the way, my website is done by Vilmos. You know that. The song that was just sang was composed by Mike Rickberg. He'll sing his version of the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of the program, and Patrick Brady is going to fix this audio and has been doing it for lo these many years, and I genuinely appreciate that about him so much. The new shirts are going to be a shirt with a bunch of my dad's sayings and a drawing of his face on that Jenny Fine did. And Jenny Fine, of course, was the artist who did the Meat Shield t-shirt, and she also did the art for the Horcrux album and DVD. You can get all of my old merch still at JackieCation.com, and the new merch, feel free to email me, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and we'll figure it out, is what I'm saying. I'm going to record a new album in 2020, but I don't know where or when. Feel free to come and watch me work on the new hour at JackieCation.com. Has all of my tour dates, and at JackieCation on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. There's also a Dork Forest Ranger page that you can get into. Donations, PayPal, Venmo, do whatever you need to do. But I'm very appreciative of everybody's support over the last 13 years. Let's get into some dorkdoms, shall we? Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm back in my living room, but now I'm with Aldrin. Aldrin Cornejo, there's no reason why you have never been on this program.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
There's essentially, it's almost, as I started the Dork Forest, there was an immediate need to get 11,000 people on the show.
Yeah, I understand.
Almost immediately. Andy Ashcraft related to 40 people who have never been on and who all should have been on and could have their own podcast, quite honestly, called The Dork Forest.
Sure. You've been on my podcast that I had with a friend of mine, but it's...
Back in the day, what was that?
My friend Jake and I, we did a podcast called You Know Stuff, which like... it was almost like a Dork Forest light.
Yeah.
Where we just interviewed people about the things that they know about.
Right.
but it didn't last for too long. Doing podcasts, it seems, is very difficult. So congratulations on being around for so long.
It can be slightly labor intensive.
Yeah.
Though Patrick Brady and myself got it pretty streamlined. It's mostly the scheduling now.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
By the way, everyone, you work on American Dad.
I do. American Dad, not Family Guy.
Not
the
Family Guy.
One.
The other one that is also dark and cartoony. And what channel is it on?
We are on TBS, I believe, Monday nights.
I believe I've only seen it on the internet. So TBS, Monday nights,
yep.
American Dad.
That's us.
Aldrin Cornejo. And your Twitter and Instagram handle is Acornejo.
That's right. Acornejo.
A Cornejo. Acornejo.
That's right.
Look to the notes, my friends. And your dorkdom is, it looks like a tabletop game.
It is.
Called Vampire Masquerade.
Vampire the Masquerade, yeah.
The Masquerade, pardon me.
Right.
Determiners, very important.
Yeah, it is. The Masquerade is actually a thing, and I'll explain it in a little bit.
How about right now? Let's do it.
Sure.
First of all, vampires.
That's right.
Have you always been in?
So it's strange. So Vampire the Masquerade is a tabletop role-playing game that came out in the 90s by White Wolf.
Oh, it's one of the White Wolf ones.
Right. So it's the World of Darkness. There's a bunch of different things. There's like werewolves, mages, changelings, wraiths.
Yeah. Andy had a bunch of the books and sold them at our garage sale.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, because I was like, this house is small.
Yeah.
You can only have so much crap.
No, that's right. And there's like decades of stuff.
Beautiful stuff that you love to collect.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
So Vampire was their like flagship.
Oh.
Like it was the one that kind of started it all and everything else stemmed off of it. And for whatever reason, it was the first RPG I played. Like, I'm wearing a Dungeons & Dragons shirt, but I never actually played this until after I graduated from college.
Well, I think the hardest part is trying to find people to play these games with when you're 13. Right,
right.
That seems to be, yeah. So did you play this?
Yeah, in high school, I had a buddy who was running Vampire the Masquerade. It was like, it's funny because the 90s was very goth. And like dark themes was hot then. So my friend was the kind of guy who would come to school wearing a trench coat.
Problematic.
Yes, correct. But he like introduced me to Vampire. I just flipped open some books and it just, there was something about it that was intriguing to me. And I think it was mostly because, go ahead, flip through it.
Yeah.
The one that you're holding right there is the revised third edition of it.
Okay. And is this the main book? Like not the...
That would have been in the 90s. So the new edition, the fifth edition, is that bottom one on that pile.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then that middle one there is Dark Ages, which is like
this looks
spin-off.
Like a D&D book.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it by Wizards of the Coast or the D&D people?
So White Wolf is the
White
is the
Wolf is the
company.
Actual publishing company. Okay,
and I think they've since started printing through a publication called Onyx Path.
Okay,
and then the fifth edition was published by Modiphius, which is like a newer RPG company. So I think one of the reasons why I was so intrigued by it was I went to Catholic school my whole life.
Okay,
and a lot of Vampire, like at least within this lore. Comes from Judeo-Christian mythology. That like the very
I just turned to something that looked like it said the Shabbat.
Yeah,
but it
the Sabbat.
Sabbat is
so the Sabbat is a faction.
Okay.
There's so much about this. The idea is that vampires stemmed from Cain because Cain was the first murderer. He murdered his brother.
Who can remember? Was it Abel? Was it Cain?
Right.
And now
Abel was the farmer.
Abel was the farmer.
No, I'm sorry. Cain was the farmer. Abel was he sacrificed a goat or a lamb or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and Cain was the first murderer?
That's right. So the idea was that Adam was like, all right, boys, you have to go and sacrifice to God because God likes that. And you have to give the best of what you have. So Cain is a farmer and he was like, I got these like shoots. I've got my first corn, my very first harvest. This is what I'm going to offer on the altar.
Yeah.
And then Abel like trots along his firstborn lamb and he puts that on the altar.
Okay.
And so Cain makes his sacrifice and God's like, vegetables. And then Abel's like, he puts his lamb on there and God's like, oh, amazing. This is the best thing I could ever ask for.
Gross.
And so Cain, out of jealousy and like, the next time they go to make an offering, Abel's like, hey, what's up? You didn't bring anything. And he's like, you're right, I didn't. And he sacrifices Abel because that to him was the thing that he loved the most. So he sacrificed his own brother. And God was like, what the hell?
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
So from then on, he gets cursed. And like, it's even in the Bible where like, you know, Cain was marked with a mark so that no one else could like help him or whatever.
Right.
He was banished to the land of Nod. And then Cain, suffers, encounters Lilith apparently, who teaches him how to survive as a thing. And I guess the curse is vampirism. He had to like, he could only eat ashes and blood and he could never see the light of day.
Okay.
And then from then on.
And Lilith, of course, had to be either his sister, daughter, or.
Actually, so Lilith in the lore was Adam's equal. Like they were equals.
But
she was not subservient to Adam, she too was banished.
Ah, wait. Yeah. So God made her just like she made Adam, supposedly.
Correct. But because Adam couldn't tell her what to do because she was her own person, she got exiled, and then God made Eve instead.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, it's just a 2.0 situation.
Right.
Interesting. Interesting. I hate all of that.
Uh-huh.
So, but that is hilarious. That's where the lore,
right? And so,
vampirism comes from.
What do you know about vampire lore? Because the game addresses pretty much all of it.
Okay, so I've got There's, I don't know anything about the Sparkle Vampires.
Oh, those guys. We ignore that.
Right. That's after anyway.
Right.
Right.
That's a Mormon's perspective of vampires.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. Was Anne Rice a Mormon?
No. What's her name? The one who wrote the Twilight series. I forget. Stephanie Meyer?
Oh, okay. Very possible.
Sure.
And then, yeah, because it wouldn't remember. I don't know if you remember. It was a choice between reading the Twilight series or the Dragon Tattoo series.
Oh, right.
And I picked the Dragon Tattoo because I thought it would be less scary.
Oh boy!
Incorrect and terrifying. So, so what I know is like your Buffy,
yeah,
your Angel,
and Buffy came out right around the time this was hot. So
okay.
Parts of me also think that like Joss Whedon must have been playing this game, or people who did
would not
True
have been
Blood.
Surprised.
Right, exactly. It was very hot in the '90s, mm-hmm. and in fact, Vampire the Masquerade had a very short-lived official television series produced by Aaron Spelling.
Oh my gosh!
And it was called Kindred the Embraced.
Okay. Oh, I remember Kindred the Embraced because I loved Charmed so much.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
for sure, all that stuff. It was very World of Darkness-y. Like you
okay,
know, that I feel like Charmed felt like. The mage version of this.
Of this white wolf business.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But Kindred the Embrace, it was called that because vampires don't call themselves vampires. The PC word is kindred.
Oh, they don't even get to use vampire for themselves?
Well, they do, but it's not like cool to say.
No, I betcha.
It's derogatory.
Right, a bit of a slur.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And then
they call themselves the kindred.
Yes. And then the embrace is the act of creating a vampire. So in common lore, a vampire bites you, you die, you come back as a vampire.
That's right.
So the rules in this are, in order to become a vampire, you have to be completely drained of your blood, you die, and then the person who bit you feeds you a little bit of their own blood, which creates mystical transformation.
Oh, that's kind of fascinating.
So not everybody can become a vampire.
Well, Gail Carriger, who writes these sort of vampire supernatural, they're young adult. They're actually like the Parasol. The one that I liked the best so far is about a girls' school that is being held in a dirigible that floats above London.
A little steampunky.
And it's super steampunky.
Okay.
A lot of bustles, a lot of tea cakes. Anyway, so the vampires in that are like statesmen. Because they've been around so long,
yes,
and they're super into drama and they're super into intrigue,
sure,
and the werewolves are like pack people, and then she goes to the school to learn how to be a spy,
okay,
and use her parasol as a weapon.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Anyway, it's adorable.
Yeah, I have to ask you what that was again.
That's around here somewhere.
Cool.
And but Gail Carriger, it's spelt like Carriager,
uh-huh,
but she's been in an episode of The Dork Forest.
Nice.
And it was she's a delight. I follow
Very
her
cool.
on Instagram as well. But let's talk about so. You have opened up the dice here, and it looks like D10s.
Yeah, so it's a completely D10 system.
Okay, so a 10-sided dice.
The way the it still plays very much like Dungeons & Dragons. Back here, this is what the character sheet looks like.
Okay.
And it feels like a Scantron. Your skills are on a 1-5 system.
Okay.
And at the beginning of the game, you are given like an allotment of dots to put places.
Okay.
So at the top of it, you'll see that there's like mental, social, physical skills.
Oh, yeah.
And then so you'll get like... 3 dots in one group, 5 dots in another, 7 in another.
Okay.
And basically, it's just like Yelp. A 1 is weak, 5 is great, 3 is about mediocre.
Oh, interesting.
And so what?
It's just like Yelp.
Yeah. So when the storyteller or the game master, as it is, tells you, just like in D&D, if there's a chance of failure, you have to roll.
Right.
And so as the GM or the storyteller will say like, okay, did you want to try to bust open that door?
Yep.
Then we'll say that that's a physical feat of strength. So mm-hmm. take how many dots of strength you have, and then we'll say that's brawl because you're using your body to do it.
Right.
And so you would look up your strength and you would look up your brawl, and however many dots there were in that, you would pick that many dice.
So physical, you have strength, dexterity, stamina. If you have 3 dots in physical, you would take 3 dice.
Correct.
And then you would look down at this smaller chart,
yes,
which has athletics, brawl, craft, drive, firearms, melee, mm-hmm, larceny, stealth, survival, And it goes on like that, alphabetically. Good for them.
And so you would take that and you'd create a dice pool. However many dots you
like
had,
if you had two pips in brawl and three pips in physical, you take five dice.
Five dice.
Okay.
And then so you would try to hit a target number, which is usually six. And so
that would be pretty easy.
Well, you would roll the dice, and however many dice come up six or higher are your successes. So if you do like one success, you barely succeeded. If you did three successes, that's a success.
Yep.
And then anything above that is like extra.
Okay.
And so it's a very like loosey-goosey abstract system. So it's not like in D&D, it's like roll a 17, you rolled a 16. You missed completely. This one's a little more forgiving because it's about telling the story. It's not really about like killing the monsters and grabbing the treasure.
Right. You have to, I would imagine that whoever the DM or the storyteller is would have to be picked very carefully just because.
For sure.
I mean, I think that's true in all tabletop games because if someone's running it that is a I don't know, just a button pushery kind of person.
Right.
They just want to kill you.
A min-maxer.
And so my favorite, like I've played several different kinds of these tabletop games.
Sure, Pathfinder, D&D.
Right. I've played plenty of Pathfinder and D&D and then also Champions.
Oh, yeah.
And then
the Hero System.
And then the Hero Instant, which is Andy created.
Right.
On the interweb.
I remember beta testing that.
Yeah, there you go.
That's fun.
And and it was interesting watching the different people run the games. Are you DMing a game right now, or are you playing?
I want to. Again, like you said, it takes a lot of work and a lot of planning, and also trying to schedule adults to come meet for anything is very difficult.
Right.
Let alone up to five.
We're playing Eberron. We're playing 3.5.
Awesome. Oh, cool.
Eberron, a D&D system.
Yeah. The dark noir version of
Right. And it's a bit of a mess because Andy doesn't like, and he's the DM, is he doesn't like psionics.
Mm.
So he has created sort of a separate alternate to make up for that in the game system.
Sure.
And so, but we've been playing this game for almost 14 years.
Wow.
And so we're guns. And he's like, we're done now, by the way. This is the last year of this game. But we only meet like every 6 weeks.
Right.
Because of scheduling. Because one of our friends has to come up from San Diego.
Oh my gosh.
And he stays overnight.
Of course. But that's cool. That's a cool thing to have. Like, you know, I think that's why I like board games and role-playing games in general, because it's one of the few things that bring people into the same room anymore.
Right,
You know, like, few people even eat dinner together anymore. So it's like, let's all get together and, like, compete shared thing.
Hang out for several hours and tell me what's going on in your life in between rolling dice and having a good time, right?
And that's what my favorite thing, too, about role-playing games is that it's basically a group lie you all agree happened.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's like you're just creating false memories with a group because you all remember the moment you slayed that dragon that never happened to
anyone else. God. That's exactly what Andy and his friends are doing.
Yeah.
I have to tell you that when I first, one of the first times I played board games with those guys, with his friends, they were reminiscing about some LARP that they had done or a tabletop game. And in the game, our friend, his friend, Judy Adler, was like, "Remember when we had sex?" And I was like, "What just happened?" And they had this reminisce, and it was a LARP because when you have sex in a LARP,
you hand them an index card that says sex.
And in their version, because they did theatrical LARPs before there was a split in the LARP community.
Uh-huh.
We're talking mid-80s.
Okay,
and so. They would do to have sex with another character. You would do pinky swears.
Oh my god!
And
how intimate? Just a little hand stuff.
Exactly. And I was like, "The hell is happening?" And in this instant, I then admitted some sexual thing of mine because I thought that's what we were doing.
Oh boy!
Yeah, too much. I was some silence. Everyone was very polite, and then we moved on.
I mean, one of my favorite stories you've told is how Maria did the Sandman LARP.
Oh,
in the wake of the death of...
She was the death of Desire.
Yeah.
And she played Apathy.
That's amazing.
Yeah. They still talk about that, too.
Yeah.
Because she... I mean, She just had more acting experience sure. than a lot of people.
I love the idea of that. And Vampire actually did have a very large LARPing subculture, because there's an official rule set for Vampire LARPing called Mind's Eye Theater.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the reason I brought up index cards is because that's how they do you can't bring a gun or a sword to a LARP.
Right.
So you have an index card that says gun.
Right.
So, you know, and everything I think is done by rock, paper, scissors instead yep. of dice.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was really popular.
Have you been one of those?
No, I wish.
Have you?
Apparently, a week ago, there was an annual vampire ball at the LA Convention Center. And
oh, wow.
I was this close to going, but yeah. I didn't snatch up tickets fast enough.
Because it's sold out?
Yeah. I guess it sells out like yearly.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's a big thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's so cool. So everybody... So this tabletop game.
Yeah.
So you're not in a game right now.
No, but I would love to. I've been talking to some friends about running one. It's interesting because with Dungeons & Dragons, it's a very easy concept of like, we're going to get together, you're going to probably kill some monsters, you'll get some treasure, you'll level up, and you do this ad nauseum until you, like you said, are godlike. And then
right.
your dungeon master now has to come up with very creative ways to challenge you.
Right.
In a similar fashion, Vampire works that way, but Vampire is not about, like, there is combat, you know, you have a gun, you have swords, you can still do combat, but you don't, as a vampire, you don't go into a dungeon, and there's not really, I mean, there are monsters, you are them.
Right, you're the monster.
You are the monster.
Is it more political?
It is. So, it's political, it's social, that's why social, mental are, like, two of the higher, like, attributes that you can take.
Right.
Because when you're a vampire, you live forever, unless you go to the sun or someone kills you by taking your head off or whatever.
Okay, is that how they're killed in this game? You have to take
yes.
their heads off?
Taking your head off will kill you, fire will kill you, sunlight will kill you. Those are like the three main ways to die as a vampire.
Okay.
Everything else just puts you in a coma called torpor.
Okay.
And then the stake through the heart thing?
Yeah.
Like, everything we've ever seen shows them like dusting and exploding whenever they get staked.
That is very convenient, Joss Whedon.
Right.
Yes.
What really happens is, and I think this goes the same with Bram Stoker, where a stake through the heart just paralyzes them.
Ah.
And so what some vampires will do will stake an enemy and then leave them out in the sun.
Oh, okay.
Or you stake an enemy, you cut off their head. But like,
right.
staking is only meant to paralyze
them. It's step one.
Right.
Of the two. Have you ever seen, at Halloween, I did the Chinese vampire ghost episode.
Ooh.
And so have you ever seen any Chinese vampire movies?
No.
It turns out, and I watched one on Halloween Day because the woman who was the Dork Forest, and I can't remember her name, remember her dorkdom, Claire Isabel,
uh-huh.
and she's a comic. It might be Mary Bacay. Anyway, but she, so she was like, they're on YouTube, and so I watched one, and vampires, Chinese vampires are absurd.
Uh-huh.
Chinese ghosts are terrifying.
Okay, yeah.
And but Chinese vampires are dumb as rocks, and the only way to kill a Chinese vampire is to write out a spell on like a cash register receipt.
Okay.
And then stick it to their forehead, and then that paralyzes them.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds very familiar.
And then the assistant of the vampire killer, the monk,
mm-hmm.
Is constantly saying, "What is this?"
Oh,
and
no.
And taking it off of the vampire. And the vampires move in this
of
sort
course.
Of sachet kind of tiny step. And they're weaving
uh-huh,
and then
uh-huh.
the tiny steps. And the people being attacked by vampires and the people fighting the vampires are usually super hilariously dumb.
Sure.
And then the vampire is dumb until the last maybe 8 minutes of the movie when the vampire becomes very terrifying
uh-huh.
and then they defeat him. But because they keep half defeating him.
Right.
And then somebody takes the spell off of his face.
Pratfalls always.
Yes. Anyway, but
well, in the Philippines we have a very similar kind of like monster. It's called the Manananggal.
Okay.
Which is, it's not a vampire per se, but it's just as terrifying. Like,
okay.
But by day they usually masquerade as like a nurse or some you know, innocent looking woman.
Yes.
And then in the evening, their upper torso separates from their lower torso, and they grow these bat like wings, and they fly around looking for usually pregnant women so that they can like use their long like proboscis tongues to suck out the fetuses. And then the idea is the only way to kill a mana nangal is you got to find their bottom torso and salt it so that they can't come back to it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I freaking love that story. Whatever that is.
I'll tell you how to spell it later. Mana nangal.
That is outstanding.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because Vampire the Masquerade did. It was around for so long that they did so many different things. Like they explored like mummies. They explored zombies, and then they came out with Eastern monsters set of books called Kindred of the East and the Asian shapeshifters called the Hanjiokai. So they try to cover a lot of ground of like the mystical and stuff.
Well, that's because each of these books is like $60.
Yeah.
And you're like, we need four more of them.
Right.
And we need a monster manual. What's happening in a country in the middle of Africa?
Yeah.
What's happening in the middle of Australia?
And actually, that's interesting because I told Andy back in January, I ran a one shot of Werewolf the Apocalypse, and Werewolf is more based on like werewolves who are basically Earth's protectors. It's like Captain Planet, but like werewolves.
Oh, okay.
Like, so the werewolves are actually kind of the heroes, while vampires are more of the villains.
Right.
Still monsters, all of them.
Right.
But
are there people?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's humans. Okay. So mortal, because vampires need to eat.
Okay.
Right. So in the game that I ran, the werewolf, because it all takes place in modern day, the World of Darkness is basically our world, but just a little darker.
Okay.
So like, you know, think Buffy, think Underworld. It's that, but it takes place here. They have iPhones. They have like YouTube.
Okay.
And so basically I set the werewolf story that I was doing like shortly after the giant brush fires that LA had last year.
Oh, right.
And basically I was seeding that it was started by the vampires, because the vampires wanted, they can't be out in the daytime. So they had their little ghoul minions set these brush fires to like basically flush out the werewolves and get rid of them. And stuff.
Okay.
And so, yeah. And werewolf is very like environmentally, like, their whole story is that the earth is dying and someone has to fight for it.
Right.
And it's never been more relevant than today.
Right.
And so I think there is a fifth edition of Werewolf coming out next year from the same company that did this, because this got popular.
Okay.
And so I think they're trying to reboot
the whole
series. And
this is back as far as popular-wise?
Yeah. Like, I think the reason this is coming back now, there is, I want to say back in like 2000 or something, this had a video game on PC called Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, and it was very popular.
I remember that.
But I didn't have a PC, so I didn't really get to play it.
Yep.
But by the end of this year, the sequel will finally come out about 17 years later.
Wow.
And it's going to be on PlayStation. It's going to be on Xbox.
It'll be on all the platforms.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's all integrating this lore. Like, so Vampire the Masquerade had just like decades of lore.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it was like from, Bible times.
Yeah.
You know, through Rome, through the Dark Ages.
Right. It has all of history to go through.
It can be.
And you can set the game in any time or age you want.
Yeah, and most take place in the modern era.
Right.
And because so,
what are the tasks of the vampires in if you're the DM, like you have to give them
something to do.
Right. Everyone makes their own character.
Right.
Are there different kinds of vampires?
Yes. So there are
classes,
13
or
clans of vampires.
Clans. Okay.
Yes. So instead of classes and races.
Yeah.
Because you start your life as a human.
Mm-hmm.
And then you basically, in your background, you're like, what were you like when you were human? Were you just like an accountant?
Okay.
Were you a bounty hunter? Like, what did you do in your regular life?
Okay.
Why did you get turned? Who turned you?
Right.
And then, like, how old are you really? Like, when were you turned? In the 1900s? In the 1800s?
Were you 12 or were you 40?
Exactly. And that can happen.
Like, okay.
You saw Interview with the Vampire. Poor Kirsten Dunst. So what happens is that there are 13 clans. There are three factions of vampires.
Okay.
So there's one, the main one is called the Camarilla. And they're technically the good guys. They're not.
Okay.
All vampires are evil.
Okay.
They eat people. Like, you can't be good if you do that.
Right.
And actually part of the pathos of this game is that you are a monster. You do have to kind of kill people to survive.
Right.
So how do you hang on to what you have left of your humanity night by night if this is true?
Okay.
And so the game master has to come up with like scenarios where you are constantly faced with a choice of like, do I allow my humanity to go down? Do I continue to try to be a good person while living this paradox of a life?
Right.
Or unlife, rather.
Is there any way to not kill people to eat?
You could do what Angel does and drink from blood bags.
Yeah.
But that's like the equivalent of having high preservative diets all the
right.
time. Like you can eat from animals, but then that's gross. They even call the ones that eat animals vegans as a derogatory
hilarious.
Term.
That is very funny.
But because basically it's also the only way for vampires to experience any kind of emotion because they're dead.
Okay.
Like, they're dead. They don't breathe. They don't eat. They can't eat. If they try to eat, it will have to come back up because none of their organs work.
Oh, right.
It's all function from the weird magic of the blood.
Right.
But drinking blood is this weird euphoric like sensation for both of them. Like,
okay.
Basically the reason why you can feed off of people is that they don't know what's happening.
Okay.
Like they kind of go into this bliss state.
Yeah.
And then you can lick the wound away. You don't have to kill a person to drink from their blood.
Okay.
I mean, you can get
You can
them,
leave them alive?
Yeah, you can.
And
they're going to be real bad.
Like, oh, yeah?
Because, you know, a couple pints of blood less.
Right.
You're not going to. It's going to take some time for a person to recover.
Right.
And
but if you go donate blood.
True. It's like that, but like maybe three or four times as bad.
It's just slightly too much blood.
Yeah, you're going to be anemic for a little bit. Okay, that Camarilla that I described.
Yeah.
Basically, in the Dark Ages, all vampires had to come up with this system of like hiding themselves because that's when the Inquisition came up. And the Inquisition was like, we got to hunt these motherfuckers.
Right, we got to get these vampires.
Yeah, vampires, werewolves, anything, sorcerers.
Yeah.
Basically, we have to protect humanity from these others.
Who does that comic book? The BPRD?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Mike Mignola.
Is it Mike Mignola?
Uh-huh.
Because he's got a vampire hunter in it. And it's all set sort of right around World War I.
Sure.
And it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
So what did the clan do to hide themselves?
So seven of the 13 clans agreed to form the Camarilla, which is like they basically made a mini democracy in vampire society.
Okay.
And they agreed that they had to follow these six traditions in order to – the first one being the masquerade, which is the vampire, the masquerade.
Yeah.
The masquerade is, you know – you have to hide our presence from humanity. If you breach that, we'll kill you.
Okay.
Because it's for our own betterment that people don't know. So vampires will use their powers to like hypnotize people, make them forget stuff.
Okay.
Or hide in the shadows so that no one ever knows that they exist.
Harry Potter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So like they live and breathe. They don't live and breathe. They walk among us.
Yes.
Like in the modern nights, a lot of them like run nightclubs because it's a good way to hunt. You know, like, these people are all drunk and don't really know what's going on.
Right.
But
they are monsters.
Right. And it's imperative that they remain hidden.
Yeah.
And then there's this whole hierarchy of like at the top is the prince and he makes sure that the place he governs runs on clockwork and some common stories are like the DM will tell you the prince of the city has summoned your little coterie of five.
Yes.
To go and look into a series of murders. There's a serial killer going around and people are dying. Can you go make sure that that's not a vampire?
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. And so, you know, you're tasked to go out and like do these things. But then, you know, there are territories because, you know, like I think in the valley alone, there's maybe 8 vampires.
Okay.
And they run little clubs or they, you know, do drugs, sales and stuff like that.
Rare.
and it's all being overlooked by a higher up.
Right.
So those 7 clans on the Camarilla are the Ventru, the Toreador, the Bruja, the Malkavian, the Nosferatu, the Gangrel, and the Tremere.
Just one Armenian. All right.
Which one was that?
The one with the IAN. It's
Which one? Oh, Malkavian.
Yeah, the Malkavians.
The Malkavians are the insane vampires.
Are they insane?
Yeah. So they basically each of the clans kind of represents
That's awesome.
A little of like so people think that vampires can't cast a reflection.
Okay.
That's actually Clan La Sombra. So each clan has like a weakness and like different strengths.
Okay.
Like Clan Ventru is the self-proclaimed king clan. Like they were destined to rule all vampires.
They're trouble.
Right, yes. the Toreador are the ones that most want to hang on to their humanity. So drugs, sex, drinking, that's what they're into.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the Gangrel are like the more animalistic ones, the ones that can turn into bats and wolves.
Okay.
They're kind of like, they're grungy and outdoorsy people.
Oh, fair enough.
The Bruja are the anarchists and the rebels. Like they basically are the antithesis of the Ventru. They're like, oh, you think you're the king? Fuck you.
Right. And so we're making IPAs over here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I want them to have small breweries because the Brujas.
they do brew. No. The Nosferatu are like classic Nosferatu. They're monstrous looking. Like as soon as they're turned, they stop looking like people and they start looking like rotting flesh or some kind of weird. So they kind of are forced to live in the sewers and stay in the shadows to do whatever.
Are they bitter about it?
Oh, very much so. most vampires are bitter in general.
Okay.
Who else did I mention? The Malkavians were the lunatics. They're just kind of touched with a little insanity.
How does that manifest, though?
So they basically. Do you remember Drusilla?
Nope.
In Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Spike's girlfriend.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's kind of a good example of one.
Harley Quinn.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of psychotic.
Right. But because they're psychotic, they see the world in a different way.
Yeah.
And so like there's something true about what they're seeing.
Right.
But like you kind of have to dig through the bad stuff to get to like
right,
the kernel
of knowledge.
Right,
you're a real monster, but the inside of you is a heart of something.
Something, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them powerful is that they kind of have insight and they can see things that no one else can see.
Okay. That's interesting. Do you get to pick what clan you're playing?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's actually part of the fun. Like, it's like how, you know, if I wanted to be a bard or a paladin, that's a choice you can make.
Yeah, yeah.
The different clan that you're in basically is, you're like, oh.
Speaks to your.
Yeah. I want to be like a biker guy who like just goes and does drive-bys.
Yeah.
I'll probably be rolling a Bruja or a Gangrel.
Okay.
If you want to be like a warlock, you can be Clan Tremere. So Tremere is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure Andy knows about this. There's an RPG called Ars Magica, which
we almost played it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So Clan Tremere is actually a small house within the Order of Hermes.
Okay.
And so Clan Tremere was like these warlocks who were so nervous that they were going to lose their powers if they couldn't live forever.
Yeah.
That they were like, we got to live forever. And so instead of trying like to figure that out, they decided to capture a vampire and become one. And so the Tremere are looked at from the other clans as like these usurpers who don't deserve to be vampires. They stole it.
Because they're kind of poachers. Yeah.
Yes. And so they're untrustworthy.
Because are they're also magical?
Well, they were. So it turns out if you were a warlock and you become a vampire, everything that's made you special as a warlock is destroyed. And
oh,
now
weird.
You're yeah, so like if Harry Potter became a vampire, he'd lose all that magic.
Right.
And there's nothing more depressing than a warlock who's lost his magic.
Right. No wonder they're all bitter.
Yes.
They are, and especially the warlock vampires,
yeah,
because they're like, now this is gonna be the best.
Right.
We're gonna be immortal warlocks.
And boy were they wrong.
Boy were they wrong.
But,
and they all committed though.
Yeah, but then what they ended up doing was they figured out a way to kind of do side magic through the blood. It's called blood sorcery.
Okay.
It's a whole other thing. So
are they the only ones who can do it?
Theoretically, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you encounter a vampire who can do blood sorcery that it's not a Tremere, something's up. So and usually Tremere will hunt those vampires down. So vampires have a thing called diablerie.
Okay.
Which is typically
they do diablerie.
Yeah.
What a great word.
Typically they feed off of humans.
That's
the way they sustain themselves. But it's possible to go and feed off of a vampire, which is a big no-no.
Oh, right.
It's politically, you don't do that.
Right. It just isn't done.
Right. Especially because what you can do is if you find a vampire that's older than you generationally and drink their blood and kill them, you basically absorb the essence of them. And now you are of that generation. So like if you were The vampires,
are they like dragons where the older they get, the more powerful they are?
Yes. Okay. So the closer you are to Cain would be the first generation.
Yeah.
He made a second generation. That generation made the Antediluvians, called such because they survived the Noah flood.
Nice.
And then those Antediluvians, there were 13 of them. Those were the ones that started the clans.
Okay.
Then there's fourth generation, which are called Methuselahs, then fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth. In the modern era, we're at the 13th generation of vampires.
Okay. Wow.
And then there's 14th, 15th, and 16th. And that is the sign of... thin-bloodedness, which is a vampire prophecy. So the oldest vampires are paranoid about prophecies.
Yeah.
Because they've lived long enough to see weird shit happen.
Right.
And so when there's signs of the end times, which vampires called Gehenna.
Okay.
One of the signs is the thin-bloods, which it's a generation of vampires who are so far removed from Cain that they can no longer make other vampires.
Oh.
And that is a sign that the world's about to end.
Interesting.
So a lot of common stories are vampires hunting those.
Okay.
You know, trying to flush them out because they're a threat of some kind.
Right. Well, because they're still vampires. They still have to feed.
Right.
But they just can't make more vampires.
But some of them are also so weak that they can feed and are still technically vampires, but they can walk around in the sun, which is also dangerous if you, as an older vampire, sleep all day.
Yeah. Because then they can come find you.
Right. So actually what happened with the clan Tremere, I feel like Tremere is the most interesting. I don't know. Anyway, the warlock who started clan Tremere found an antediluvian that no one was paying attention to, and he diabolized him.
Okay.
So basically, he jumped from like a sixth generation vampire to a third generation vampire, and everyone in his bloodline then became that powerful.
Oh, because it trickles down?
Yeah. So that's how they earned their place.
Okay.
So
wow.
Yeah. So that those are the seven, the Camarilla.
Yeah.
Then there's a sect called the Sabbat, which you saw earlier.
Right.
Now the Sabbat are the even more monstrous vampires. They're all bad.
Yeah.
These are even worse than that. Because the Sabbat doesn't believe that they should be hiding from people. Why would you hide among your chicken nuggets? They're food. Eat them. We're powerful. What can they do to stop us?
Right.
So that's led by the La Sombra, which are the ones that can't cast reflections.
Okay.
And they can manipulate shadows. That's their power.
Okay.
And then the Jemisi, which is where Dracula comes from. Vlad the Impaler is of clan Jemisi.
Okay.
They're called the Shapers because they can actually like take flesh and warp them like permanently. And so in modern days, a lot of Jemisi are like plastic surgeons.
But they're hilarious.
But they're also like really inhuman. Like Silence of the Lambs. What's the Hannibal Lecter?
Yeah.
Kind of like that. That weird, creepy, methodical. Like
right, we're inhumanity. Making lampshades and Gini kind of. Okay.
So those two clans form the Sabbat, and they'll take any vampires who don't believe that the Camarilla is right.
Okay.
And so that's like the big war. It's the Camarilla versus the Sabbat, because the Sabbat are always
and they're a mix of all the different clans to some extent, because people are just rebels off of
right exactly
the other ones. Okay.
Then,
well, that's interesting.
Then there's the independent clans, which are the Ravnos, which are kind of like gypsies and nomads. The Giovanni, which is an Italian family of vampires that are necromancers.
Okay. A vampiric necromancer? What's that all about?
So they can talk to ghosts.
Oh.
Because every World of Darkness game had to have some faction that could talk to ghosts.
Okay.
Because there was a whole ghost game.
Oh, there was a ghost game.
Yeah. but basically, the Giovanni could like raise the dead as servants talk to spirits and whatnot, which is powerful if you're living forever.
And breaks up a day.
Yeah.
It's a real clock eater.
Then there was the Asimites, who are also called the Banu Hakim, which are like the Islamic vampires. Because if you have Judeo-Christian mythology, you can't ignore Islamic.
Right.
So they're...
Because Judeo-Christian, Islamic, it's all the same.
Yeah, it's the Abrahamic.
It's the same three people.
Right, exactly. So. But they also know blood sorcery because they didn't steal it the way the Tremere did.
Yeah.
So they know it. And they're also known as like the Silent Assassins. Uh-huh. And then there's the Setites, who they call themselves a ministry. They... claim their vampirehood from the ancient god Set, the snake god.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So those are the four kind of independent. We don't play with others.
Right.
But they usually are hired on mercenaries or whatever.
Okay. So they're willing to get involved.
Yeah. So those are like the 13 main clans.
What do you pay a vampire in blood?
Blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In people?
So the Camarilla. Okay. So I'm watching a stream on YouTube called LA by Night.
Oh, right.
And
the
it's
Twitch thing.
Really cool.
By the way, I'm talking with Aldrin Cornejo, you
Hello.
Guys. It's Acorn Neho on the Twitter and the Instagram. Acorn, the word acorn. A-Y-H-O. So there you go. You're watching Twitch.
So LA by Night is an official World of Darkness stream with some pretty well-known performers being the vampires.
Well known now because they're on this thing?
Exactly. well known in terms of, like, do you know about Geek and Sundry?
Yeah.
Geek and Sundry Nerdist, that whole, like, they're people who are prominent in that.
Okay.
And it's run by Jason Carl, who's an official employee of White Wolf.
Okay.
And he's their DM. And it's gone for 4 seasons now.
Oh,
and
wow.
It all takes place in Los Angeles, which is one of the things I love about it.
Oh.
And
you got to read this book. Sharp Teeth.
Ooh, okay.
Have you ever heard of Sharp Teeth?
No.
It's about a pack of wild dogs who are werewolves,
uh-huh.
who also play cards. And they, it's all written, not in iambic pentameter, but it's written in this weird
prosy?
Prose.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But the prose isn't prose. It's poetic.
Okay.
And what the hell is it?
Sharp Teeth.
Sharp Teeth, which I think we must have lent to somebody because it's gone.
Okay. So
and,
is it L.A. based?
It's L.A. based.
Ooh.
And so the geography is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because you're like, what are they doing in Altadena?
Right.
And
how did they get there in 10 minutes?
Exactly. Anyway, so the Twitch thing is set in...
It's set in L.A.
Yep.
And
L.A. by Twilight or...
L.A. by Night.
By Night. There
and
we go.
Yeah, most vampire campaigns are called by night. Toronto by night, Chicago by night.
Oh, nice.
There's whole lore
yeah.
and stuff. So in L.A. by Night, it's it follows a group of anarch vampires. So anarchs aren't part of the Camarilla or the Sabbat. They're
rogues.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so Los Angeles is... basically called the Anarch Free States. All of California is kind of the Anarch Free States.
Okay.
San Francisco, San Diego.
Yep.
So they're split
Nobody's
up in
Nobody's going
these...
up to Crescent City.
Right. but LA is divided up into these baronies.
Okay.
And so there's barons. There's a Baron of Hollywood, the Baron of the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're actually following the adventures of the Baron of the Valley and his coterie.
Okay.
And there's a lot of, like, weird stuff happening up in LA. And then this... Camarilla guy from San Francisco suddenly shows up and says, I am the Prince of Los Angeles.
Oh,
I declare praxis.
Okay.
And everyone in LA is like, no, you're not. But the Camarilla has a lot of money, a lot of power.
Okay.
And they have resources. So any kind of idea to try to uprise against them
yeah.
is a bad move. And so basically this
so he comes in and literally becomes the Prince of...
Well, he says he's the Prince.
Yeah.
Now... you're going to be a prince of what if no one wants to follow you?
Right.
But he's got honchos who are like...
Right, he's got a small army.
Yes.
He's got a pile of cash.
Right.
Okay.
And the anarchs are basically trying to do their best to prevent a full-scale war in L.A.
Sure.
But this guy, this prince, comes in and he's like, I'm the prince, so I expect a blood tax from everybody.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. And then like, oh, this nightclub... yeah, burn it down. That night, yeah, we'll get rid of all this. So that's what's happening is the anarchs are trying to get together and band to unify
right.
against this prince. And so that's what this 4-season Twitch stream is about.
And is it a tabletop game or is it...
It's a tabletop game.
Okay, it's not acted out. It's just people playing
it kind of is. It's almost like a half LARP, half tabletop because the four main characters... there's a Nosferatu named Jasper. There's a toreador named Nellie G. Nellie Griffith, because she's from Griffith. She's the Griffith from Griffith Park.
Okay.
Victor Temple is the Ventru. He's the Baron of the Valley. And then they have a new person named Annabelle, who just became a vampire 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And they're trying to kind of show her the ropes.
Are they... the names, like Annabelle, is that the name of the actress or is that the name of the character?
Yeah.
So the character and the thing you just told me about those characters,
right.
That's all fictional.
Yes.
And then these are played by actual actors.
Yes, so Annabelle is played by Eric Ishii. Victor Temple is played by B. Dave Walters. Nellie G is played by Cynthia Murray, and Jasper is played by Alexander Ward.
Okay.
And so if you recognize any of those people, check it out. It's
check
pretty
it
cool.
And how do you and you get to it just by doing LA by Night?
Yeah, LA by Night. They have the first three seasons on YouTube.
Okay.
The fourth season just started a couple weeks ago, and that's on Twitch, but also will end up on YouTube eventually.
Right. And how do you how many episodes?
I'd say there are
season.
6 to 8 with a couple. One,
and are
one
they over an hour?
Oh, yeah. They're like 2 hours long.
They're 2 hours
long. I've had to do them like in episodes. Like right. I'll have it on in the background.
Have it on in the background.
Yeah, yeah,
that's,
yeah.
I'm a huge fan of having things on in the background.
For sure.
Because
there's too much happening.
There's too many things happening. Andy cannot watch television unless he's sitting down watching television.
Wow.
And I'm like, no wonder we see nothing. because we're behind on everything because I would like, well, let's just put Discovery on.
Yeah.
It'll go into the next episode.
Right.
I will have gotten my emails done. And
you'll have like a periphery of something that was
happening.
And I'll
have an idea of what occurred.
For sure.
It was the mirror universe. Good for me. And but nope, we got to sit here and we got to experience it. Same with when he reads a book. It stays read.
Yeah, okay.
I will skim a book and then get to reread it 4 times because I'll be like, look what else happened. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, this...
I weeded off.
the stream is also available as a podcast, which okay. is how I did most of it because it's so much easier to just listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
But I've since gone back and rewatched a couple things because it was like a half LARP. They're
dressed
as their characters.
Okay, so
but they're still
costumes.
Sitting at a table
and rolling dice.
Yeah,
and
but they're also in character and they're acting.
So there's a fair amount of acting.
It's very highly produced.
And it's highly produced.
Yeah, like
and maybe even written.
It probably partially so. There's
okay.
only so much they can pre-write, I think, because
yeah.
they still roll the dice. There's still the whole like,
right. They're still living in
failure.
The moment.
Yeah,
and they have to riff somehow.
Absolutely.
Like I've done that nerd poker,
uh-huh,
Brian
uh-huh.
Hussein's nerd poker.
Right.
And I'm always like, I can play any game you want to play,
uh-huh,
but to make it fun and interesting for sure,
mm-hmm,
is counting a lot on my personality.
Yeah.
Like, that's why you want to book somebody who is pretty quick on the riff scale. But,
for sure.
But I sometimes the pressure of doing nerd poker, I'm just like, you guys.
No, I get it.
And the only person who doesn't care is Blanket Patch, who throws a comment at the wall every 12 seconds. So it doesn't matter because he will always be funny.
In this one, I'm surprised with how you're probably right in it that it's like partially scripted because the characters interact with each other more than they do with the storyteller.
Okay.
Like the storyteller will present like the scene and then tell them what's going on, but then entire conversations will happen between the four characters.
Okay.
And because it's
Which
a storyteller
doesn't happen
game,
usually
right.
in tabletop. Yeah, you're just like, I'm thinking about doing this. And if there is conversation, like, you know, that Eberron game that
yeah.
we're playing, there has been over the last 15 years, many episodes that I call entirely political.
Yeah.
And they will almost put me to sleep.
I was going to say, you're not really a fan of the political.
I'm like, are we still talking to the Goblin King?
Right.
Shoot
him?
Are we going to roll any dice? I have arrows. Anyone? I have darkness arrows. Can I please?
Yeah.
And we did, in fact, you know, our cleric, he is a dragon mark. It's all working out
sure.
for him. He's very powerful. And he rolled a pile of 20s.
Oh, yeah.
And so the Goblin King owes us at least 3 favors. And
I mean, yeah, if you're gods, I would hope so.
Well, at this point, this was probably 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
One of the things that happened in the first couple of years, because here's that thing about reminiscing. Anyway, but we rarely talk to each other. We rarely
sure.
have full conversations.
And if it is, it's usually deprecating. Like, I'm currently playing a gnome barbarian, and my friend who's
playing
a human... I'm basically playing 5th edition.
Good.
It's just a campaign that my friend...
That's awesome.
But the human cleric cannot stand my character and will constantly be like, why are you? I will end you. And I'm like, go for it. I'm a 3-foot gnome who has a big axe. Like, I can hit you at the ankles.
You gotta get past my axe.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
that's so funny.
But like in I guess in Vampire, like you can have whole conversations with each other because it just keeps adding to the story.
Okay.
And like, you know, any good storyteller, dungeon master will basically yes and everything, and like, oh, did you just establish a truth? Great.
Oh, and noted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If I wish I could show you, Andy has 3 3-ring binders of recaps of all of Eberron.
Ooh.
And for the last 15 years, right?
Wow.
And so
isn't that incredible?
Yeah, it really is. I was like
make the movie.
Right, make the movie, write the book. I mean, it's clearly what Name of the Wind is.
For sure, for sure.
Because that's, speaking of min-maxing your character,
yeah.
It turns out that guy is the best bard
ever. The best bard ever.
And the best magician, and the best ranger,
yep.
And the best thief, and these, yeah.
I do like the way they treat magic in that book, though, because it's like science, where
okay.
It's like give and take. You're like, oh, did you want to burn that house down? Well, you're going to have to get cold somewhere else.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a very Doctor Strange kind of thing that's happening in the comics right now, is that all magic has a cost.
Yeah.
And so for a while,
as above, so below.
And he brought like a beastie from another dimension to eat all of his costs.
Like a snail in an aquarium?
Yep. And it's been in the basement for a long time. And
oh, wow. That's interesting.
And guess what happens?
Nothing good.
It turns out he gets out. And then there's trouble. There's all kinds of terribles, as my grandmother would say. He's causing terribles on the world.
That's funny because, okay, so World of Darkness has a series called Mage of the Ascension.
Okay.
And it borrows heavily on the consequence of doing magic, changing reality in some way. Has to affect you.
Right.
Like that whole 3x3, like, you know, cost effect. It's called Paradox.
Okay.
And so if you do something to alter reality, like if you strike lightning out of nowhere.
Yeah.
At some point, reality is going to punch you back and you don't know when.
Right, right. Then that makes, and the thing is, it almost makes a science, it makes sense
yeah,
to some
of course.
Extent, right? Because of reaction and
right.
action and reaction and,
but,
yeah.
But like, the way the world works is it can just store itself until it's ready to hit you back. So you might explode in lightning at some point. And so you just kind of right. have to worry about that.
Right. That'll cut into your sleep.
That's interesting that Doctor Strange is doing that. I'm excited for whatever this new Doctor Strange movie is, because it's supposed to be like a horror movie.
Right. I'm hoping that there's part of me. Did you see the New Mutants?
I've seen the trailer years ago, and hopefully
right.
it will come out this year.
Right. Hopefully one day it will indeed come out. Because
like
that
Maisie
looks
Williams
like...
is not a child anymore.
Oh, shit.
Arya has grown up, and she's way older than she is in that movie.
Oh, damn it. Did they shoot it like 5 years ago?
I think
something?
So, yeah.
Did
and then
Marvel
they did
do
reshoots.
It?
I think it's like a Fox before Disney. You know, I don't know. That's the politics of
like
when
a...
movies come out is so weird.
Well, but the thing is Marvel tends to be more linear.
Right.
Like, because of their team or the machine that cranks those things out seems to have streamlined it quite nicely. Much like me and Patrick Brady, you guys. we're making the Dork Forest happen.
Yeah, very well-oiled.
Well-oiled machine. So, so we have like 5 minutes left. Cool. And I am, of course, talking with Aldrin Cornejo, and it's Acorn Aho. Acornayho.
As me.
On the thing. So, Vampire Masquerade, what was your favorite, do you have a favorite time you played, or?
Well, the first time I played, I rolled a Toreador, and, because they're the artists, and
oh.
So I was like, well, I'll play myself,
yes.
essentially, and I got to run a nightclub, I don't even vaguely remember all the things that happened.
Sure.
I think there was, like, a mission where we had to save a child, turned out the child was an ancient vampire.
Ah.
And then we were...
Because if you're made a vampire when you're 7...
That's you forever.
You are 7.
Yeah. I found out very recently that vampires can't be tattooed.
Oh.
Because so every morning or every night when you wake up from your sleep, your body reverts back to the moment you died. So if you didn't have any tattoos when you died, those you'll hold on to the tattoo for the evening.
Right.
But in the morning, all of that ink will like bleed away. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's kind of fun.
It's unpermanent.
I can finally get my Night Wolf tattoo from Mortal Kombat.
And you can put it wherever you want.
Put it wherever I want.
Every day. Every day. Moves around.
Face tattoo.
Night Wolf.
Night Wolf. Whoosh. And then it's Green Tomahawk.
That's
yeah,
right.
Fun.
But yeah, I mean, I would love to run Vampire again. I have some friends that I think are interested, but then now I got to do the homework and
right.
like, put a story together.
Right.
And like, yeah, it, I think I want to. I mean, I have a breadth of knowledge about all the stuff.
Right. You've got, and so do you just, now these are three books. Are they the only vampire books that are?
Oh, there's so many other books.
So many books.
But this, I brought these two because they're like the older ones
okay.
from the original edition. And what I would be running would be this one.
It's, which is the fifth edition.
They've streamlined it more. So these dice, there's red and black dice. And
yep.
the way the system works now is when you do something as a vampire, you have to check the blood, basically rouse it and see if you get hungrier.
Okay.
And so your dice pool is made up of hunger dice, which are the red ones.
Yep.
And
how risk of them.
Exactly. Yeah. So the more hungry you get,
yeah.
if you don't drink blood, mm-hmm. you just keep getting these red dice. And if they, the more red dice you have, the more bad things can happen.
Okay.
Cause you know how like you can fumble in D&D.
Yeah.
You can roll a one.
You roll a one and then you're like, and then double check that.
Yeah.
How bad was the one? And then
right.
you run another one and you're like, oh, you just stabbed yourself in the foot.
Yes.
Well played.
So that's basically what the red dice are.
Okay.
Are the one dice. They,
oh.
So if they can go one of two ways. They can either crit, which is good, but if it's a crit on the red dice, it's the beast comes out of you. So it's not you who crit, it was the beast. So you might end up with like a pile of bloody bodies.
Right.
You didn't mean to.
Because you didn't mean to. You just lost control
right.
of everything.
Or you can also fail on them, like fumbling in
yeah.
D&D, and things will just go bad. So
okay. All of a sudden, you have a stake in the heart, and
exactly.
you can't move.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's a balance in the system now where you can. I don't want to hunt for people. I want to just not eat people. I want to be good.
Yeah.
But that can backfire. If you just keep getting hungrier, you might not even be able to be played anymore.
Right, right. And they just added this, the
yeah.
red.
This is the new,
in
this
the
is
new edition.
System. In the old system, it was more of like a magic meter. It was called
okay.
a blood pool.
Okay.
And so you had 10 boxes, and every time you wanted to do one of your little magical powers, you'd cross off a box.
Okay.
And then if you drink blood, you'd get that box back. So it was kind of like a, it was almost like a video game.
Right, right.
Yeah, but I like this system better because it's like just abstract of like risk. You're just like, I mean, I could get hungrier. Like, there's what are the chances something bad will happen? Oh, pretty good.
Oh, pretty good.
Yeah.
Turns out I rolled poorly. And so are you doing that thing that a lot of Andy's friends will do with the D&D books? Well, they'll just read the books.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I look at charts and just kind of...
Yeah, I own way too many books for games I'll never play.
Right.
I just love a system.
You love a system.
Yeah.
You love to read about the character creation or about the backstory. I mean, you have a very comprehensive.
Yeah.
That was awesome,
thank
by
you.
The way. And so just sitting around, you're just like, well, I'm going to read a chapter.
Yeah.
I'm going to read a couple pages.
Yeah. Okay. The books are also kind of structured in a way where it's like a slice of life. Like,
okay.
It'll be articles of like what's happening, and you're like, oh, that's interesting. They wrote it. There's a thing. It's called Beckett's Jihad Diary.
Okay.
Because they use the term jihad. It's problematic because it's an inner turmoil kind
right.
of scenario.
Oh, okay.
And so
it feels super sensitive.
Yeah.
Anyway,
there was a card game called Jihad that they had to change the name of
yeah.
based on this.
Okay.
You can see why.
Yeah, I think we all get it.
But Beckett's Diary is like this whole, just it's a book about this thick that just tells stories of like what's going on in the vampire world now. What's going on in Toronto? What's going on in LA? What's going on?
Oh, that's
just to kind of catch you up.
It's just it's a color commentary,
yeah.
And backstory stuff. So it's just fiction that
mm-hmm.
that they've hired people to
yeah.
write and
little short stories,
and everybody's psyched to have been any part of any
yeah.
of it
yeah.
because they're super fun stories to write.
And honestly, like, wherever you are in the world, vampires could definitely be doing stuff. How could the world be as bad as it is today if it wasn't because of vampires?
Right.
Oh, because I don't want to believe that people are garbage.
Right, because sometimes people are garbage.
Most of the time people are garbage.
And the other book I'll recommend you read is, and it isn't a vampire movie, okay, but it's set in a futuristic Dubai.
Ooh.
And it's a noir, sort of hard-boiled detective in a future. It's like Blade Runner.
Ooh.
But in Dubai, and like, and it's called When Gravity Fails.
Okay.
And it should be a movie because it's outstanding. Anyway, Aldrin, it's been an hour. You'll be happy to know.
Yeah,
and,
thanks so much. It was really fun to be here.
This was awesome. That was fascinating. From Kane on down, you guys.
That's right.
We did it. And so Vampire Masquerade, go follow Aldrin on the internets.
That's right.
And
watch American Dad.
Watch American Dad.
Let me keep working on my job.
Exactly. Thanks for listening, everybody. And you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?